One Man's Family, winner of 44 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 26th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, Father Barber congratulates the opposition. At the Barber family home, 264 Seacliff Drive, San Francisco, Father Barber is greeting his daughter Claudia in the library.
So, while it's pleasant to have people dropping in, Claudia, I don't flatter myself that you've come to see me.
Why, Dad, what a remark. Why am I here, then?
To keep up with the gossip.
Oh.
To find out whether Teddy's going to marry General Roderick Stone or make another headlong mistake and settle for young Clinton of Detroit.
You aren't prejudiced or anything.
I am not. I say nothing one way or the other. General Stone left for Washington, and Mr. Clinton is still on hand, and disaster is right around the corner. But I make no comment. That's the news you wanted?
Well, that's a little of it. Where's Mom?
Babysitting with your grandchildren.
At Jones?
Where else?
Maybe I'll run over there.
Yeah, goodbye.
Oh, Dad.
That's the pattern. They come for crumbs of information. Get them. Goodbye. See you later.
Where's Hazel?
Market.
Don't be grumpy.
Grumpy indeed.
Tell me something. Mr. Clinton was sent here by the people in Detroit to make sure your car was fixed. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Well, has he fixed it?
Possibly. I will say that parts have stopped falling off.
Well, if his job is done, how long will he be able to stay here?
Yeah.
If he's a troubleshooter, Dad, there must be other trouble somewhere else. Or is he on a vacation?
Yeah. I'll find out. Well, George, yeah. Nicholas liked General Stone.
Certainly did. Dad, do you think Teddy's pulling back because he's 55? He's such a superior person.
Yeah.
I can't understand why she'd hesitate.
Moth to the flame. Married Elwood Giddings with disaster written all over him. Teddy has always been the type to head for the debacle with all flags flying.
Some sort of perversity? A desire not to be happy?
There are such people.
Where is Teddy this afternoon?
Seawall.
Pardon?
Sitting with Mr. Harvey DeWitt Clinton on the seawall.
Oh.
You can see for yourself out the window.
Oh, dear. Did General Stone say when he'd be back?
He didn't.
Will he come back here?
Doubt it. Teddy has to report back to San Antonio very shortly. I suppose they'll meet there if they meet again.
Oh, yes, there they are.
Eh?
I say I do see them down there on the seawall.
Yeah. Ought to turn cold pretty soon.
Maybe that's why they're sitting so close together.
Eh? You've noticed that, too?
Well, I'm not going to interfere.
Is that aimed at me?
What does Paul say?
Foolish question. He says nothing. At least to me.
Well, I think I will go over and talk to Mom for a moment.
Yeah.
When Hazel gets back, tell her I'm over there, will you, Dad?
Yeah, if you like.
And look here, may I make one suggestion?
Don't bother. I can guess what it is.
All right, then.
I maintain an attitude of complete impartiality. Teddy couldn't possibly suspect how I really feel.
Good. See you later. Goodbye, Dad.
Yeah. Goodbye, Claudia. Western Union? This is Henry Barber. Straight wire, please. Charge to Seacliff 43373. Yes, to General Manager Kermit Seiger. Dreamboat Division, Consolidated Colossal Motor Car Company. Detroit, Michigan. Dear sir, may I thank you sincerely for sending your upstanding young troubleshooter, Mr. Harvey DeWitt Clinton, to supervise repairs to my car. Mr. Clinton has completed his work in exemplary fashion, and the car now runs as advertised. I hope I haven't taken up too much of his valuable time. Gratefully yours, Henry Barber. Thank you. Yep. Send it at once.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
You know, I'm not much of a mechanic, but I do know what makes a car operate and what keeps it from running away with itself. A carburetor, for instance, controls the flow of gas. The voltage regulator checks the power. The accelerator regulates the speed, and air pressure in the tires must be correct if the car is to run smoothly. Yes, power, gas, speed, and good tires are essential to a car, but they must be regulated to ensure good performance. And you know, when you stop to think about it, running a car can be compared to running the government. The president is the initial power which runs the government. But Congress is the unit which regulates that power. Thanks to our Constitution, the president can never become a dictator, since much of his power is restrained by controls assigned to Congress. Take the question of money. The president cannot authorize any spending without the consent of Congress. Further, much of the president's power is channeled into departments, boards, and agencies, which are established and maintained by Congress. He can wage war only if Congress declares it, and even his vetoes can be overruled. The president, on the other hand, has certain controls over Congress. He may influence the length of congressional sessions and can at any time convene either or both houses in special session. The Constitution, in effect, also invests in him the power of legislative initiative, which means the introducing of new policies and providing for actions which will vitally affect the people. The president also acts as business manager for the government. Every bill which passes the two houses must receive his approval before it can become a law. And though Congress, by a two-thirds vote, can override the president's veto, there have not been many instances where it has been done. Thus, by a series of checks and balances, is the running of the government controlled. That's how your American Constitution works.
It's an hour later. Teddy, having watched Harvey DeWitt Clinton drive away, now picks up the evening paper from the front lawn and comes into the house.
Father Barber, paper's here.
Thank you, Teddy. Well, alone? What happened to Mr. Clinton?
Oh, he thought he should get back to the hotel to check his messages.
Yes. Splendid young man, Teddy.
Well. Well, that's a surprise. I thought you didn't like him.
What made you think that?
Well, it seems so obvious that you prefer General Stone.
I'm not getting married. None of my affair.
I wish you'd say something agreeable to Harvey, then, next time he's here.
Eh?
Well, he says up to now you've only grunted at him. He doesn't even know if you're pleased about the car.
Really?
You don't realize, but you can frighten people sometimes.
Nonsense. How could I frighten an ex-paratrooper? Frighten indeed. Loose use of language.
Well, he wants your good opinion.
Why?
Well, naturally, he wants all my people to like him.
You're going to marry him, are you, Teddy?
I haven't given him my answer yet.
Hello, I'm home.
Hazel, Claudia was here. Your mother is still babysitting at Joan's house, and Claudia said to tell you she's gone over there and wants to talk to you before she goes home. You are to telephone or drop in.
I'm right here, Father. You don't need to shout.
Oh.
Hi there, Teddy. Must have got cold on the seawall.
Hi, Hazel. It did a little.
Where's Harvey?
I had to go.
Oh, I bought an extra steak. We hoped he'd stay to dinner.
Well, how sweet of you. I'll give him time to get to the hotel and call him and invite him.
Yes, I'm going to get my slippers on. Excuse me, please.
Oh, Hazel, don't go. I want to ask you something.
All right, Teddy.
Has Paul said anything to you about Harvey?
No.
If he liked him or, you know, any remark, whatever.
I haven't talked to Paul very much lately. He's been so busy.
I know he likes Roderick. Everybody has told me how much they like Roderick, even the triplets. I think his being a general must impress them. If people would bother to talk to Harvey and see what he's really like...
Dad, is Hazel back?
Hi, Claude. I was just going to call.
Oh, hello, Teddy.
Hi.
Get cold on the seawall?
Yes, it did. Excuse me, I'm going up and change.
What did I say?
Never mind. Everybody always says the wrong thing in this situation.
What is the situation?
I'm afraid she's going to manage to marry the wrong man again. That's what she did the last time.
She didn't have a choice last time. There was just Elwood Giddings.
On the contrary, there were millions of other unmarried men in the world. Or does that sound catty?
Poor Elwood, he wasn't that bad.
No, but wrong for her. She needs an older man, Claude.
Mom thinks she's afraid of phrases. The glib psychological ones, like father fixation.
Well, now, maybe that's true. She adored Paul, so...
And even though she's in love with the general, she deliberately turns to somebody else to prove how mature she is.
I've got a motto, always merry and bright. Look around
nothing
and you'll find every
it.
Cloud is silver.
Well, Father, what are you so cheerful about all of a sudden?
Change in the weather. Very invigorating.
Why, it's turned freezing. It's awful outside.
I enjoy it. As I told General Stone one morning, if you don't like San Francisco weather, wait 10 minutes. Well, chores to do. Yes, yes. Always things to do in a house like this.
Did you say there's nothing to be done about it?
You think he's done something?
If he hasn't, he's on the verge. If anything dreadful happens to Harvey, be sure to call me right away.
More of the Barbers in just a moment.
For shoplifting, the sentence of the court shall be one ear sliced off and 20 lashes with a cat o' nine tails to be laid on in the public square at high noon. Now, that sentence was never carried because we don't punish shoplifting in that extravagant manner. But in San Francisco in 1848 and early 1849, before the founding of real law and order in the Gold Caps, many a man lost an ear or both ears for lifting a partner's poke of pay dirt. But when the basic laws of the United States came in, when California was admitted into the Union, the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution came in with it. This Seventh Amendment reads in part, "Nor shall there be cruel and unusual punishments inflicted." And so with order came the reign of the Bill of Rights. 10 amendments that will stand tall in the minds of men for all time. The lash, the spiked interior of the Iron Maiden, the bone-breaking wheel, the red-hot poker, and the carving knife. These are no longer the punishment of criminals in the United States. But always remember, it didn't just happen that way. Far-sighted men, humane men, our first Congress made it that way, showed the way with our Bill of Rights and the Eighth Amendment. It is one of our freedoms.
Twenty minutes later, Teddy comes to the library door and looks in at an elderly gentleman who seems to be hiding behind the evening paper.
Father Barber?
Huh? Oh, yes, Teddy.
Harvey can't come to dinner.
Oh.
He's been called back to the office, Detroit.
Oh.
But he said to tell you he's very grateful for the warm telegram you sent his boss.
Well, that's all right, Teddy. Harvey did a good job. He deserved a kind word.
I suppose I should thank you, too.
You're welcome. Nothing at all. Happy to do it.
Excuse me.
Hazel, Mother Barber, terrible news. Harvey's flying back to Detroit at 6:30 tonight.
Yeah. Western Union, Henry Barber at Seacliff 4-3370. Yes, night letter to General Roderick Stone in the Pentagon, Washington, D.C. Change in the weather here. Hope to see you soon.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 32, Book 126, A Crowded Day at the Barber's. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 44 national awards, now in its 26th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.